Hello, I'm Rob Buckingham, and welcome to the Digging Deeper podcast, episode 87. We dig deep into topics and questions each week to discover what the Bible says. When it comes to Halloween, we often witness Christians express fear or outrage. But is there a better way for Christian people to respond to festivals with which we disagree? Let's find out. Halloween. And I've got this question here from Sam. She says, "Hey Rob, I've just seen this on a pastor's Facebook page of a prominent church in Melbourne. What are your thoughts?" And so the post that Sam refers to, it's likely that you've seen it because it's been widely shared on social media. It's fairly long, but I'll read the whole thing to you just so you can get the gist of what I'm going to be talking about tonight or talking into. The post says this: "It is getting to that time of the year, and I'm concerned at how Australia has ramped up the selling of Halloween stuff. Every year it gets worse and worse, more and more graphic. It comes across as a little bit of innocent fun and dress up, but is it? Maybe it is about taking on a different identity or persona, even with alternative events. Remember, our world is more spiritual than natural, so parents, please be wise. Have a read of this and do yourself a favor. Purchase the book Out of the Devil's Cauldron, an eye-opening book, and then see what this guy says about Halloween." Of course, the post is referring to ex-Satanist John Ramirez, who warns parents of the dangers of celebrating Halloween. I quote John Ramirez here: "It's like having a one-night stand with the devil." There's a quote by Anton LaVey, founder of the Church of Satan, where he says in his own words, "I want to thank every Christian parent for allowing their children to celebrate the devil one night out of the year, which is Halloween. He's intentionally thanking Christian parents. Thank you for dressing up your kids, changing their identity, sacrificing spiritually." He likened the practice to having a one-night stand, saying, "We go celebrate Halloween, we're in bed with the devil for one night. To me, it's like, why would you want to cheat on Jesus? Jesus doesn't cheat on you. I don't see the Satanists coming to your church to cheat on the devil. No way." John Ramirez was once one of the highest-ranking warlocks in the world until Jesus saved his life. His friends called him Lucifer's son because Satan himself would visit him regularly in his bedroom to talk about strategies for destroying people's lives. One night, John had a near-death experience where he found himself in hell, but Jesus showed up himself and gave him one last chance to come to Christ. John took that chance and never looked back. Ramirez came back from that near-death experience and destroyed $100,000 worth of satanic paraphernalia in his New York home, and was then tormented for 30 days by his past demons. But it didn't stop him from living his new life for Christ. Today, he is a pastor, evangelist, and best-selling Christian author, and he warns the church of the dangers and realities of spiritual warfare. And this is another quote from John Ramirez at the end of this rather long post. "The only harvest we should celebrate is the harvest of souls," Ramirez said. "Jesus Christ is your answer. It's a relationship with God. Make peace with God. Pray. Prayer works. The power of Satan is limited. It's a hoax. And the power of Jesus is limitless. And it brings you to a place of knowing your purpose and destiny of who you really are created to be." I've got to say, I really agree with that last paragraph. Jesus is your answer. The power of Satan is limited. It is a hoax. That is true. And so in the light of the truth of that last paragraph, I wonder about all of the outrage and fear expressed in that post about Halloween. So there's so much to unpack here, and I'll do my very best to address everything. But first, Let's look at the history of Halloween. I'd like to acknowledge the allaboutgod.com website as the source of some of the information that I'm using in the first part of our time together. Hallow is the same word for holy, and we find that in the Lord's Prayer, of course. Hallowed be your name. And Ian, E apostrophe E-N, is a contraction of evening. So Halloween is a shortened form of All Hallows' Eve, which is the day before All Saints' Day. Halloween had its roots in the ancient Celtic tribes of Ireland, Scotland, Wales, and Brittany. Not Britney Spears, of course. On October the 31st, the tribes would celebrate the festival of Samhain, spelled S-A-M-H-A-I-N. During this festival, Celts believed the souls of the dead, including ghosts, goblins, and witches, returned to mingle with the living. In order to scare away the evil spirits, people would wear masks and light bonfires, which is why people dress up on All Hallows' Eve even to this day. When the Romans conquered the Celts, they added their own touches to the Psalm festival, such as making centerpieces out of apples and nuts for Pomona, the Roman goddess of the orchards. The Romans also bobbed for apples and drank cider, traditions that may sound familiar to you, particularly if you come from the Northern Hemisphere. The Christian aspect of this holiday began in 835 AD when Pope Gregory IV moved the celebration for all the martyrs, later called All Saints, from May 13th to November the 1st. The night before became known as All Hallows' Eve or Holy Evening. Eventually, the name was shortened to the current Halloween, just as we've changed other words. So, for example, holiday used to be Holy Day, and Saturday used to be called Saturn's Day in honor of the god of Saturn, the planet. And so I don't see anyone kicking up a fuss about, you know, Saturday and all of that kind of stuff, even though it's named after an idol. The purpose of these feasts is to remember those who have died. It is a celebration of the communion of saints, which reminds us that the church is not bound by space or time. So it seems that Halloween shares a similar history to Christmas. December 25th was the birthday of Mithra, the god of the unconquerable sun. It started the festival of Saturnalia, which continued for a full month. It was a self-indulgent time when food and drink were plentiful. Sounds a bit like Christmas does today. It wasn't until the 4th century that the church decided to make this date Jesus' birthday. It's very unlikely, can I say, that Jesus was born in the middle of a Northern Hemisphere winter. The shepherds certainly wouldn't have been out watching their flocks. If they were, they were freezing to death. Both Halloween and Christmas were pagan festivals that were adopted by the church for the purpose of using an established celebration to remember and share Christian truth. And now the pagans want their celebrations back. Halloween starts the church's liturgical period of All Hallowtide from October 31st to the morning of November the 3rd. The season is observed by the Roman Catholic Church, the Evangelical Lutheran Churches, Anglican Church, and some other Protestant churches. Because All Hallowtide commemorates Christians who have died, Halloween has become identified by characters representing the dead, zombies and the like. But of course, the tradition goes much deeper. November the 1st is All Saints' Day and is also called All Hallows' Day or Hallow Mass. It's a Christian feast day celebrating the mystery that God has called people into a relationship with himself through Jesus. And then the following day, November the 2nd, is All Souls Day, which remembers Christians who have died in faith and for faith, the martyrs. Pope Francis beautifully expresses this day as follows. The blood of our Christian brothers and sisters is a testimony which cries out to be heard. It makes no difference whether they be Catholics, Orthodox, Copts, or Protestants. They are Christians. Their blood is one and the same. Their blood confesses Christ. And so Christians are encouraged to reflect on the glorious mystery that God has provided for everyone to enjoy a relationship with himself through Jesus. If you already enjoy such a connection to God, bask in it. And if not, the way is open. All you need to do is ask Jesus for that relationship. So that gives you a little bit of history of Halloween. Okay, let's take a closer look at the Facebook post I read a few minutes ago. I've seen it a lot, but it's not the sort of thing I would share. I find myself actually reacting to some of the content, such as statements like this: every year it gets worse and worse, more and more graphic. And it's true, I guess, that the American celebration of Halloween, the trick-or-treat thing, has become more popular in Australia over the past few years. But what I get, I guess I react to, is the alarmist view of the world. And I want to fess up here. I used to embrace this, the whole narrative that the world is getting worse and worse. I mean, if you have a futurist view of the book of Revelation, for example, your expectation is that the world will get worse and worse and worse. The only problem is that history doesn't back up that narrative. History shows that things were a lot worse 100 years ago, 500 years ago, and 2,000 years ago. And if you go back even further than that, it was even worse still. And so everything's getting worse and worse, except it isn't. Now, I'm not saying that life isn't extremely difficult for many people in some parts of the world. I'm thinking right now, obviously, of Israel, Gaza, Ukraine, Afghanistan, North Korea, parts of Africa like the Sudan, where things like war, famine, and oppressive governments make life awfully tough for precious people. I'm also not suggesting that life is rosy for everyone in Australia. But on the whole, we are very blessed in this country, which also goes for many other parts of the world too. Overall, the world is better today than it was, say, 100 years ago. For example, there's less extreme poverty and hunger in the world today than in time past. Child labor is on the decline. Life expectancy is rising. Child mortality is down. Homicide rates have fallen dramatically. Yes, even in the United States. More people live in a democracy today than ever before. More people are going to school for longer. And as a result, literacy rates are way up as well. There's many other indicators. And if you're interested in that topic, feel free to Google it. And so when I hear people say every year it's getting worse and worse, I feel a reaction on the inside of me. Really, I am done with this so-called Christian form of outrage. It appears to me that some of Jesus' followers need to be outraged over something as fuel that keeps their faith relevant. They're always outraged about something, and they go from outrage to outrage. We saw it, you know, people were outraged over, for example, in 2017, here in Australia, we had a postal survey where people voted in favor of same-sex marriage. Then those same people were outraged about the pandemic restrictions and outraged over the vaccines. And now they're outraged every year about Halloween and so on. Always got to be outraged about something. And I don't believe that that's an appropriate way for God's people to live or express themselves. What about this guy, John Ramirez, an ex-Satanist? I hadn't heard of him before I saw this post, but I have Googled him. And I think it's wonderful that he has experienced a life transformation and come to Christ. But his story actually reminds me of a similar person who I looked up to greatly during the late 70s and early 80s as I was in the early years of my Christian faith. The guy's name is Mike Warnke. Maybe you've come across him. Maybe you've heard of him. Again, you can Google him. His stuff's probably on Spotify, I would imagine, or maybe YouTube. Mike was a Christian evangelist and comedian, and he put out quite a few comedy records. And I had them all. And he wrote a book, which I read as well, called The Satan Seller. And the book records details of Mike Wonky's participation in sexual orgies, alcoholism, and drug dealing, his rise in the ranks of Satanism to the level of high priest, presiding over satanic rituals, including magic spells, summoning demons, ritual sex, including kidnap and rape, the attempt on his life, a heroin overdose, his heroism in Vietnam in the war, and how he found Jesus and came home as an evangelist. The story ends with Wonky living happily in California with his wife, Sue Studder. In fewer than 3 months after the release, The Satan Seller had become a religious bestseller. And some of that information is taken from Wikipedia. I loved Mike Wonky in my early years as a Christian. He was cool. I read his story. I played his comedy records on the radio. Of course, I was a DJ back in those days on a top 40 station in Western Australia when I came back to my faith in Jesus in 1979. I went to see my boss and I told him about my conversion to Christianity. And I asked him if I could have some time on the radio to do a gospel program. And he gave me 15 minutes on a Monday night. And for part of that 15 minutes, I'd share a little bit, play a track or two, and then maybe a snippet from Mike Wonky. After a while, he liked it so much, he extended it to half an hour. And then I got a sponsor for the program, a businessman from my church who sponsored it. And they gave me an hour. So an hour on every Monday night between 8 and 9, I used to do a program called Good News. And lots of stuff, interviews, music, and Mike Wonky with his Christian comedy. Now, many details of Mike Wonky's story were increasingly exaggerated by Wonky, but his story played well into what became known as the Satanic Panic, which gripped much of the church for most of the 1980s. The Satanic Panic was baseless conspiracy theories about cults committing mass ritual child abuse and worshipping Satan. Ken Lanning, who was an FBI agent back in the day, he worked on hundreds of so-called abuse cases with the Bureau's Behavioral Science Unit, and he said this: the evidence wasn't there, but the allegations of satanic ritual abuse never really went away. When people get emotionally involved in an issue, common sense and reason go out the window. People believe what they want and need to believe. So there's a guy who was high up in the FBI who investigated many of these so-called satanic ritual abuse cases and found that there was zero evidence for them. If you're interested in finding out a bit more about the Satanic Panic, there has been some podcasts done on this. The podcast Cults did about 3 or 4 episodes. So it's well worth checking out. And there is also a podcast called Satanic Panic. It's on Spotify. I imagine it's on other platforms as well. And so you can search that if you'd like to know a little bit more. I started my first years as a Christian during that time. And I've got to say, I bought right into it. I thought it was real, but it all turned out to be an absolute hoax. It's easy to blame so-called Satanists for child abuse. Of course, well before the 1980s, children were being abused, but the abuse was happening in churches and church-run organizations, as well as sporting clubs, the Scouts, government orphanages, and schools, and so on. It's easier for us to look out of the window than in the mirror. And that's what the Satanic Panic was all about. And that's the narrative that people like John Ramirez are propagating 40 years later. The problem is those people out there, and we Christians need to be outraged and outspoken in denouncing them. And I think we need to take a good, long, hard look at the mirror, because I didn't hear much outrage from Christians when the outcomes of the Royal Commission here in Australia into institutional responses to child abuse, and so many of them happened because of priests and pastors and church workers and volunteers within churches, and yet all the time this stuff was going on, Christians were pointing the finger at the world about stuff that wasn't even going on. Anyway, back to Mike Wonkey. His records became the most popular Christian comedy albums ever produced. Through the 80s, he and his third wife toured extensively and raised millions of dollars for their ministry. Churches and Christians loved him. I loved him. He was a Christian superstar, but we were all deceived. In 1991, Cornerstone magazine launched an investigation into Wonkey's life and testimony. The investigation included interviews with over 100 of Wonkey's personal friends and acquaintances. His ministry's tax receipts were also examined. The search exposed a number of inaccuracies and evidence of fraud and deceit in Wonkey's accounts. It appears that Wonkey's entire story was fabricated, the Satan seller, all made up. Friends reported that he was given to fanciful stories and that at no time was he a Satanist priest or an emaciated drug addict sporting long fingernails and waist-length hair. Neither had he met Charles Manson in a coven, another claim of his. Manson was actually in prison at the time. The investigation also revealed the unfavorable circumstances surrounding Wonkey's multiple marriages, affairs, and divorces. He's been married and divorced four times. There's at least one report of him beating his second wife. We were all duped by him. While I'm not suggesting that John Ramirez has made up his story, I do recommend that we Christians refrain from being gullible like I was back in the 80s. It's easy for someone to say that they were the highest ranking of warlocks in the world, but the story needs to be verified. Is there proof that he was a high ranking warlock? I can't find anything online that proves that. Is there any proof that he destroyed $100,000 worth of satanic paraphernalia in his New York home? Did he video this or take any photos? $100,000 is a lot of money. What exactly did he destroy and how? If you Google satanic paraphernalia, it comes up with T-shirts and pendants. $100,000 is a lot of T-shirts and pendants. Where was the so-called witchcraft church that Ramirez was part of? And what were the names of any of the murder victims he claimed to have been close to as a kid? Also, will he turn himself into police for killing people in an ICU ward while he was astral projecting? And does he have doctor's reports that verify he was blind for a year until surgery restored his sight? All of these things are claims of John Ramirez with no proof. I feel like another Mike Wonkey is in the wind here. The little I've seen of John Ramirez shows a guy who changes details in the story each time he tells it. Maybe Cornerstone magazine could do some investigation to verify his story as they've done on Mike Wonkey and others. One other thing from this post is worth mentioning, and that's the supposed quote by Anton LaVey, the founder of the Church of Satan, where he says in his own words, and then it's quoted, I want to thank every Christian parent for allowing their children to celebrate the devil one night out of every year. If Anton LaVey did say those words, and there's zero proof that he did, he was likely being sarcastic. LaVey was an atheist. He didn't believe in God, and neither did he worship Satan. He, like other Satanists, was a materialist who didn't believe in supernatural beings. Satanists do not believe that Satan exists. Neither do they believe in the human soul or life after death. They're total materialists. They do not believe in the supernatural realm. Anton LaVey's particular brand of Satanism, he's dead now, of course, was nothing like what most people envision when they think of devil worship. LaVey's satanic philosophy was self-centered and self-indulgent. It wasn't an overly demonic, as some would suggest, and that's true of modern Satanism in general, where the basic tenets include these things. You decide what's right and wrong. Everyone's relative, right? If it feels good to you, it must be good for you. Deny yourself nothing and you will suffer less. If it works, if it is efficient, if it produces results, it is good. And number five, self-expression and self-actualization are the greatest goods. Now, I've met plenty of Christians who live like that, and I don't doubt that I've been guilty of some of those things too, but it doesn't mean we are devil worshippers. John Ramirez's story sounds like it was based on movies, an overly fertile imagination, and some evangelistic exaggeration. In a moment, I'll give you what I believe is a better way to interact with Halloween and other festivals with which we may disagree.
We hope you're enjoying this Digging Deeper podcast and finding help understanding the Bible and how it applies to life. Here at Digging Deeper, we'd appreciate your help letting others know about this podcast. One way to do this is by rating and reviewing the podcast on iTunes. And please like Rob Buckingham's public figure page on Facebook. You can interact with us there and ask questions you'd like Rob to answer in future episodes of Digging Deeper. Now back to Rob.
Rather than fear and outrage, what would be a better way to interact with Halloween? I think the Apostle Paul gives us an excellent pattern to follow. Paul had arrived in the city of Athens, and he was waiting for Silas and Timothy to join him. We read about this in Acts chapter 17. And so Paul goes for a walk. He starts to walk around the city. And Acts 17, verse 16 tells us that Paul was greatly distressed to see that the city was full of idols. I want you to think about that for a moment, how Paul was feeling on the inside, greatly distressed. But then he goes and chats with some of the people of Athens. And this is what he says to them. I see that in every way you are very religious, for as I walked around and looked carefully at your objects of worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, to an unknown God. So you are ignorant of the very thing you worship, and this is what I'm going to proclaim to you. Aren't they wonderful words? I just love that. I find Paul's choice of words here absolutely fascinating. Remember, first of all, that when he was walking around Athens, waiting for his friends to arrive, he was greatly distressed by their idolatry, but he didn't communicate his unhappiness to them. He was highly considerate in addressing the people. He actually complimented them on their spiritual devotion, and he referred to their idols as objects of worship. I think there's a lesson there for all Christians. Are we courteous or are we judgmental when interacting with others about what they consider precious or enjoyable, such as Halloween or maybe Diwali or Ramadan or any other festival? Much of what I've seen on Facebook posted by Christians about Halloween was based on fear, outrage, and judgment. For example, yesterday I saw this on Facebook. Remember, people, Satan comes disguised as an angel of light. If you are truly saved, the Holy Spirit will make you not want to celebrate this holiday. There's so much wrong with this judgmental statement. I know Christians who love Jesus and choose to celebrate Halloween. It's their choice, and I won't judge them, and neither will I cancel them. And, you know, this is another thing I find fascinating, and this is particularly from people who, Christians who are always getting outraged. One of the things they get outraged about is cancel culture. So they always feel like they're being canceled. Can I say, everything I ever learned about cancel culture, I learned from Christians. When I first became a Christian, so much in my life, they tried to cancel. Now, use your imagination here. I had long blonde hair. And on Sunday mornings, I used to go down to the beach and I'd body surf for an hour or two. And then I'd go to church, still wearing my board shorts, wearing thongs on my feet and a singlet. And I'd just rock into church, still with sand around my ankles from being at the beach. I was just happy to be in church with God's people, worshiping him and all of that. But I copped so much judgment, particularly from the pastor. And the pressure was on because everybody in the church were wearing suits and ties. The guys were, at least. Women wore dresses and head coverings. And to be a Christian, Rob, you need to cut your hair, get some decent clothes, buy a suit and tie. And so much was canceled. As Christians, we weren't allowed to drink, we weren't allowed to smoke, we weren't allowed to dance, we weren't allowed to have a TV, we couldn't go to the cinema to watch movies. It was all cancelled. And that's what I see from some of these people always banging on about stuff being cancelled, and yet when the boot's on the other foot, what they want to do is cancel stuff. They want to cancel Halloween and other things. You know, the Puritans back in England in 1647 cancelled Christmas and Easter. That's right, from 1647 to 1660, because Christmas and Easter led to people celebrating and eating. And so we can't have people being full of joy and eating food. And so the Christian Puritans cancelled Christmas for 13 years. That's what fundamentalism in its extreme will do. And we'll see some of that in these Facebook posts. Paul had learned to place a filter between his feelings and his words, and we would do well to imitate his example. When responding to Halloween, Christians must choose not to be a wet blanket. Jesus was often found hanging out at parties and dinners with those who were scorned by the religious people of his day, and he was criticized for it. He was there so he could impact the lives of others. Both Jesus and Paul engaged with the culture of their day. I encourage you to read Acts chapter 17 and note that Paul didn't just read the Bible. He also read philosophy and history and poetry, and he uses all of those in Acts 17 to communicate the gospel. What he was doing was finding common ground with his audience. He connected the dots and introduced them to Jesus as a result. The Bible is replete with examples like this. Consider what God used to lead the Magi to Jesus. Remember them, the wise men? They were astronomers. If you were trying to communicate to astronomers to lead them to Jesus, what would you use? Maybe a star. What a great choice. Jesus' parables revolved around the interests and industries of first century people. God established common ground with people by becoming one of us in the person of Jesus. So instead of staying inside your house and putting a sign on the door that says, "We don't celebrate Halloween, go away," how about stocking up on lollies to give generously to children who knock on your door? I've heard of people setting up an urn in their driveway and giving out free tea and coffee and cool drinks to the parents and the children as they walk around the street, having little lolly bags already made up to hand out to kids. We did that one year. Christy and I, we didn't let our children dress up as witches and goblins. They actually didn't want to dress up as witches and goblins. They'd dress up in other things like, you know, fairy costumes or whatever. One year, our youngest daughter, Trinity, and I bought several bags of lollies and walked around the streets handing them out to kids. When I took our other two daughters to our church youth group one year, we pulled the car over several times to hand out lollies. One dad asked me why we were doing this, and I told him that we were on our way to church and wanted to make sure that we had a chance to be generous on our way. The look on his face was priceless. I think we shattered his preconception of Christians. You know, people will remember how you treated them far more than what you told them. And so let's bring some positives about Halloween and not take on the spirit of Scrooge. Let's find some culture that we can connect with at times like Halloween and Diwali and Ramadan and other festivals that we Christians may not celebrate, but other people do. And, you know, think about how you would feel about someone not honoring Christmas, for example. How slighted you feel? Well, the Bible says to treat others the way you would like them to treat you, and to love your neighbor as yourself. That's the golden rule and the royal law. They're the foundation of the way that we are to live as Christians. I think another thing that I'd reflect on here too is that Halloween is fantasy. The modern production of Halloween, if you like, it's fantasy. It's not reality. Satanists don't behave in that way, all right? It's really important that we blow that out of the water. And there's plenty of fantasy that Christians have enjoyed over the years. Revelation is a great example. It's a book of fantasy. It's metaphorical stories that are packed with truth. But you know, there isn't a 10-headed monster coming out of the sea. But there's a lot of symbolism there. And there's amazing truth in the book of Revelation. But we don't throw it away because it's got a dragon and Satan and all of these other bizarre characters. We honor it for what it is, part of the sacred scriptures. You think of J.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings, some really bizarre characters in Lord of the Rings. And of course, C.S. Lewis's Narnia Chronicles too. I mean, it's got a good witch and a bad witch. And it's got a lot of other characters as well. But we've enjoyed it for decades because they're amazing stories and they're packed full of truth. And I think Harry Potter has resonated with a whole generation. I know our youngest, who didn't like reading, suddenly switched on to Harry Potter and became an avid reader. So it's not reality, it's fantasy. And they're ripper stories, all of the ones I've just mentioned, and we should be able to enjoy them. And so they're my comments on a Christian, I believe, a Christian response to Halloween.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. A new episode of Digging Deeper is out every Wednesday. If you like this podcast, please share it with others and rate and review us on iTunes. That goes a long way to help others find us. If you have a question or topic you'd like Rob to address, please get in touch with us at Rob Buckingham's Public Figure Facebook page or email connect@baysidechurch.com.au. Join us next week when Pastor Rob does a deep dive into superstitions. What are they? Where did they come from? And how should Christians respond? All that and more on next week's episode of Digging Deeper.